You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Hello, Greenbelt. We are so glad to be with y'all tonight. I'm Trey Hall. Welcome to Hope and Anchor. We're glad you're here. If you're new here, we are all about searching for the spirituality running through everyday life. We are all about having deeper conversations that take us into spiritual exploration wherever you are on the spirituality spectrum. So whatever, you know, whatever your everyday life looks like, whatever you are exploring, wherever you are on that spirituality spectrum, whether you are religious or spiritual but not religious or agnostic or atheist. I heard someone today talk about themselves as post-atheist, which was fascinating to me. Whether you are faithful or faithless or faith adjacent, or you don't know, or you don't care, pull up a chair. You are welcome here. We are so glad to have you here. Hope and Anchor, as you know, is a venue sponsored by the Methodist Church for all the people, is what we talk about. Methodist for everybody. And we are a venue here at Greenbelt, but also at other festivals across the land. But we are also, and you may not know this, we are also a podcast. Did anybody know that? Some of you knew that. Excellent. And you did not probably know this. Tonight, be very excited. This live show is being recorded for our Hope and Anchor podcast. Woo! So what that means is we're going to have a great conversation with our secret special guest. But if you shout something out, you may be heard on a podcast. Our mics are not that good to pick up your table conversation, so don't worry about that. But if you do shout out and answer the questions that might be thrown out to y'all, know that you might be picked up on the podcast. We actually encourage heckling. We actually encourage calling things out. So I like to think about this as good church, as good spiritual community. So it's we hope that something happens between not just me and the special guest, but by through all of us together. Is that all right? So just to get you warmed up real quickly, I'm going to say something for our podcast, and then I want to have a great big cheer. This is sort of like when you see the applause, you know, on the television, right? So this is for the podcast. Here we go. You're listening to Hope and Anchor, recorded live at the 2024 Greenbelt Festival. I've really always wanted to do that. Last thing I'll say before we introduce our special guest, we love the conversations that happen at Hope and Anchor on the stage or in the studio between our guests and the host. But more important, or as important as that, is the spiritual conversations that we hope are happening all across the folks listening, encountering Hope and Anchor, encountering us as we live out our life. And so we want everybody to join in. We are interested as the Methodist Church in coming alongside people searching for spirituality or doing spirituality in new ways, trying to explore in ways that they haven't before. We are interested in, if you're listening on the podcast tonight or here at Greenbelt, we're interested in your stories, in your rituals, in your beliefs and your doubts. We're as interested in the questions that you ask as we are as the answers that you give. We care about that spiritual journey, and we want this Hope and Anchor thing not just to be something cool here at Greenbelt, but to be a community of spiritual explorers across the world, across the land, across the interwebs. So wherever you've encounter that, in this place tonight, or walking your kids to school, or in the dog park, or with a community of explorers, or in a new or different or fresh relationship with the love that won't let us go, which is one of my favorite names for God. We want to invite you to go a little deeper. So, with no further ado, let me introduce our guest tonight. Our guest tonight says that nothing is sacred, but everything is holy, and shame belongs in the closet. Amen to that. She was raised in America's very conservative Deep South, and she was the first drag performer to get to number one on the iTunes Christian charts. One of those things she and I have in common, and I bet you know which one it isn't. Welcome to Hope and Anchor, Flamy Grant. Come on up, Flamey. Yes. Have a seat. So good to see you. Welcome.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm a contestant on The Price is Right.
Well, you just wait, honey. You just wait.
Oh.
Find yourself that microphone and
this
adjust
right
it however
here.
You can either hold it or adjust it or whatever you want to do.
Oh, I'm good at holding it. That'll work just fine.
Hello. Hello. Just for those who are unable to see well or those listening, could you describe your outfit for us?
Well, it's fabulous, first of all. Trust me, believe me, podcast listeners, it is fabulous. No, it's just a little simple jumpsuit with a little bit of a blue and white swirl to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, I might have a wig and a little laurel that I bought here at the festival at a booth somewhere out there, and
what are you seeing before you right now?
I'm seeing the most gorgeous room of human beings I think I've ever seen. Someone's knitting right here. I love it. Multitasking, I can appreciate that. I'm a busy queen. I get it.
And this is your first green belt?
This is my first green belt.
How have you experienced it so far? It's been sort of a crazy day so far.
It's been a wild, long day. I heard there was wind overnight. I wouldn't know. I was in a hotel room. I've done dragon camping exactly one time before in my life, and I said never again. But no, it's been fabulous.
Flamie, I take a little bit of grief because I'm one of those green belt gays that also stays at the Premier Inn.
You're gay? No one told me I was going to be a gay person.
Oh, it's a whole bunch of gays up here. Or queers up here. So yeah, I stay at the hotel too, honey.
And Yeah.
I heard your set today on the main stage. That was brilliant.
Anyone
else here?
Thank you. So fun. What a beautiful place, first of all, to get to sing songs. And then to have an audience like y'all, it blew me away. Thank
you. Kept saying, trust your drag queen. Trust your drag queen.
We're here to take you on a journey. You just got to lean in.
And I love that you also said, and I really resonated with this and identify with this, you said, one of the things you love about being a singer-songwriter is that the material is mostly spiritual autobiography, and you enjoy talking and singing about yourself.
Yes.
So I love to hear about origin stories. Tell us the origin story of Flamie Grant.
Well, a comet fell from a distant planet. Oh, no, wait, that was someone else. I grew up in the United States, in the Bible Belt, Western North Carolina. It's actually a pretty cool town, Asheville, North Carolina. Is anybody familiar with Asheville at all? A couple of you? Yeah, it's a cool little hippie mountain town that's actually very progressive and very queer-affirming and lovely. But I didn't know any of that growing up. Because I grew up in a tradition called Plymouth Brethren that was, it's a cult, girl. Like, let's just call it what it is. And so I was very isolated and very protected, air quotes, from experiencing anything outside of that little world. So just as, I don't know, think of whatever is like comes right before you're just like a full uniformed. Why can't I think like Amish? We weren't fully that removed, but almost. So like women had to cover their hair in our church growing up. Women were not permitted to speak during services, that sort of thing. I, being raised as a boy, was expected to do those things. Was expected to speak and become a leader. And it was an interesting journey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So. Someone today said, I hear that Flamie Grant is going to be in the show tonight. It's like, I said, no, it's Flamie Grant. Mm-hmm. And they are British and young. And so I was trying to sort of help them understand that your name rhymes with a singer-songwriter from the States.
Yes.
And who has become... People don't all know Amy Grant.
Which is such a shame.
It is a shame.
Shame on you if you don't know who Amy Grant... I'm just kidding. I'm the shame slayer. We don't do shame. However,
if shame
we did, that would be the reason.
So how was the connection between you and her kind of born?
Well, Amy Grant, if you don't know, is the queen of Christian pop. I was raised in a house where I was only allowed to listen to Christian music growing up. So... anything that I could find at our local Christian bookstore, which was called The Carpenter Shop. Ha ha ha. And Amy Grant was the diva. My peers, my classmates, like Britney was new on the scene when I was in high school. So that's who, Britney and the Spice Girls and Christina, like that's who my peers were listening to. And I was like, who? Christina who? Because I was busy listening to Amy Grant and, Jackie Velasquez and Sandy Patty and whoever. She holds a very, very special place in my heart. She's a singer-songwriter, but she had this massive pop crossover moment in the 90s where you might know this song, Baby, Baby. Da, 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 da. Why don't I know the words? Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed right now. Baby, baby, I'm taken with the notion to love you with the sweetest of devotion. Stop. For a minute, baby, I'm so glad you're mine. Yeah, so that's Amy Grant. Stop.
There Thank might you. Be other Amy Grant fans we, here.
We should probably take this show on the road.
I think
Trey.
We might, honey. Well, because I was wasn't raised in church, but at college I had a sort of conversion experience.
You're gay and you weren't raised in church?
Okay, honey, so... I was in college in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, just down from Franklin, where Amy Grant went to church. Mm-hmm. And I would sometimes go over, because I was in love with her in a non-romantic way.
There are many types of love.
I played her tapes and CDs, and I remember the song, All I Ever Have to Be Is What You Made Me Be.
Beautiful.
And as I was coming out, like I played that song. Do y'all know that song? All I ever have to be is what you made me. Oh my gosh. So have you ever met I never met her. You've never met her either.
Not yet.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Like it's just, Does I know she... it's, I'm manifesting. I've been putting it out into
You're
the universe.
You're manifesting.
It's going to happen. But we haven't crossed paths yet. She does know about me.
She does know about
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I've talked to enough people in her circle. She's a big deal. If you don't know, like Amy Grant's like she was the 15th best-selling female pop artist of the 90s. So like that's the stratospheric level that she reached back then. And so, you know, you don't really run into her at the store.
You don't.
But one day I will. I've talked to folks in her circle and someone actually bought my vinyl at one of my shows and had me sign it to Amy. And I said, Amy who? And they were like, you know which Amy. So she has my record. I don't even know what I wrote on it. I was shaking. It was very frightening.
Has become, as she's been more and more pro-LGBTQ, she's sort of become this like maternal figure for lots of queer folks. Sort of like Dolly Parton is. She always was.
It's just, yeah, she's been more vocal about her support of the queer community.
Yeah. So I just had to ask, because the name is right there on
it
the,
is.
You know,
it is.
Yeah. So one of the questions we ask at Hope and Anchor, and I'm going to ask this of y'all too, when we ever have guests on, is like, where are you on the spirituality spectrum? Now, and we have folks on the show who are all across it. So how would you describe where you are on the spirituality spectrum?
Yeah, one of the things that my friend Derek Webb, who's a songwriter, says that I love, he says the word Christian, when it's used to describe anything other than a person, is just a marketing term. And I really like that, because that enables me to just freely say, I'm a Christian artist, I make Christian music, I have no qualms about saying those things. I do struggle with the Christian identity for me as a human being. And I think I struggle in the same way so many of us do. I don't want to have to, you know, say I'm a Christian, but here are the 8 bullet points that kind of clarify that for you, because it's a loaded word in our world in 2024, especially for me in America, where we have this version of Christianity, and maybe it is here too. This is my first time spending an extended period of time in the UK, and it's been lovely, by the way. We just have this brand of evangelicalism in America that has just taken over. It is very politically power hungry, and so it's what most people think of when they hear the word Christian, and I don't want to have the conversation every time I say that, so it's a bit of a struggle. However, that's where I came from. You know, I was raised in that world. It's in my bones in a way that it'll never get out. And girl, I've tried. I have tried to leave on many an occasion, tried to leave this institution, this religion, this faith behind, and I have not been successful yet at doing that. So
What keeps pulling you back?
Well, I like to describe my spirituality in terms of practice now, as opposed to belief. Mm. You know, growing up, it was so much about like, that was very funny. Whatever just happened, we had a little thing just erupt from the table. As a child, it was so important that you believed all the right things, and you were able to check off. I didn't mean to embarrass you. Sorry.
Oh, yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Well, yeah. I can't help it. I'm a drag queen. We like to pull other people into our chaos. That's just what happens. So it was so important as a kid that you believed all the right things and you checked all the right boxes. You know, you had this creed and you had to be able to say yes to all of it in order to belong to the community that at least for me, the community I was in. I had to believe a lot of different things. And belief is just not helpful for me. No shade to people who for whom belief is a big part of your spiritual experience. But for me, it's just not. I found it to not be helpful to say that, well, I believe that this might be true. Because I, at the end of the day, the word belief, like a belief is by default not true. Right? If it were a true thing, we would say it's a true thing. It's a fact. Instead, we have this word that means I hope that it's true, right? So I just, for me personally, I like to deal in things that I know for sure, and the things that I can't know, like what happens after I die or what God is actually like, because I don't have, like, you're here, I can see what you're like, right? Like I can touch and see and talk to you, and that's a different experience with the divine, right? That there's a different part of us that is intuiting what we think the divine is. And so for those things, I just like to live in the uncertainty of it. And that's a thing I wasn't allowed to do as a kid. You know, uncertainty was not okay. You had to have, what is the verse? Be ready to, you know, have an answer for the faith.
Always be ready to give an account of the hope that is within you. Is that
wow,
the one you mean?
That is the one.
Oh, baby, I am from the Bible Belt.
You are. You got that way better than I did. That's, wow. Yes. So be ready to have that account. And so really, for me, it's much more about like, oh, that's what you believe? Like, cool and interesting, and I want to hear about it. And like, there's just space for all of that in my experience of my spirituality now. But really, for me, it comes down to practice. And what am I doing that makes me a better person, that makes me feel more connected to you all, that makes me feel like I'm having the impact I want to have in the world? It's spiritual practice as opposed to spiritual beliefs for me.
I'm going to ask you a question, but in a second, I'm going to ask y'all in like 2 minutes to shout out, if you don't mind, how you describe your spirituality. Now, you won't have a chance to give a narrative like Flaming just did, but if you had a word or two or three.
I mean, you could just keep talking.
Yeah, that'd be a different kind of podcast, but you won't have a mic, so you'll have to shout it out. But I'm going to ask that. So what's the practice for you? Where's the practice where you feel connected?
Yeah, it's everything from, I used to call it prayer. Now I just call it meditation. Yoga, like using my body in physical ways to like feel connected to like my own history and where I'm going. That feels really important to my practice. Community, which, you know, I would have just called church back in the day, but community is still super, super important to me, and fellowship and those sorts of things. So it's a lot of different things.
Yeah. Okay. What about y'all? How do you describe yourselves spiritually?
Inclusivity.
Wonderful. I'm going to repeat them into the mic for the podcast, but just shout them out.
Connected.
Mystery, refreshed.
In nature.
Yes. Feeding.
Rediscovering.
Questioning.
Complicated.
Amen.
Facebook status. It's complicated.
Anybody else?
Resilient.
I love it. Amen. Today in your set, you said something like, and I wrote it down, like something about in the car you had the only experience of hearing the voice, a voice. And I thought I had an experience of God's calling when I came out on the corner of a Poplar and Mendenhall in Memphis in a car. That's the only time I've ever felt God sort of say, and God said, baby, you're gay. So that was the truth. that was the fact. But I was thinking about that. And then Craig, who's one of the hosts here, said, I've got a question for Flamey. What was that time, the only time she heard God's voice? Could you say what that was?
I would love to tell this story. It's a big story, which is why I don't tell it on stage. I already talk. Y'all know if you came to the set. I talk a lot. But this is a story that I love the opportunity to share it. So thank you. I was 24, 23, somewhere in there, and I was on a road trip up through the Pacific Northwest in the United States, which is, you know, like Oregon and Washington, very beautiful country. And I was on my way back to Reno, Nevada, which is where I lived at the time. And I was just driving along, and it had been a great road trip. I was by myself. It was a long weekend. I was like President's Day weekend or something. It was in the winter, or excuse me, in the early spring, because the snow was melting, and there was just like water, little streams and waterfalls off of the road everywhere. So I'm having a fabulous time, and all of a sudden, I'm driving just by myself, and I just start like weeping, like the kind of convulsive, body shaking weeping that makes it very unsafe to be driving. It was just this like unsolicited, unbidden sort of emotion that came up, and I didn't know what to do with it, and I couldn't stop it, so I pulled over on the side of this mountain freeway. It wasn't even a freeway. It was a two-lane, you know, road through the mountains. And I just started talking to God and saying, "What's going on? Why am I sad? I thought I was happy. Why am I crying? What's happening?" And I calmed down enough to just kind of sit there for a second, and I heard a voice. And it wasn't a still small voice. It wasn't something in my head. I heard a voice, and y'all can take that however you want to take it. This is. I'm just telling you what happened to me and the experience as I experienced it. But I heard an audible voice with my ears, and it said, "Get out of the car." Mm. And I was like, "It's cold. do I have to?" And so I got out of the car, and then I stood there for a while, and I was like, "Well, what now?" And I could hear this little stream from the snowmelt off to the side, and I heard it just back in the woods a little ways. And the next thing the voice said was, "Go to the water." I was like, "Okay, girl, here we go. Let's hike over the hill to this little creek I found," and I stood there next to it for a while. And I was waiting, and then the voice finally said, "Okay, get in the water."
Uh-uh.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm having a mental breakdown, clearly. But you know what? I did it. I took my shoes and socks off and rolled up my pants, and I stepped in this ice-cold snowmelt stream off of the road somewhere near, what was that? I can't remember the name of the county. It's just Northern California somewhere. And stood in it for as long as I possibly could, which was very not long, I'm sure. It was very painful. And finally just threw myself out onto the dirty bank of this creek and was kind of just curled up in the fetal position, and the weeping was back, and I was just convulsing, and I was like, "What the hell was that?" And I, as I was laying there in the dirt, the voice finally, the last thing the voice said was, "I was washing your feet."
Mm.
And so I went back to my car, and I had a Bible with me because I traveled with a Bible in those days. Now we just all have it on our phones. But, I looked up the story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. And it's a commission moment. Mm. You know, it's a moment where Jesus says, "Go and do the same for my beloved," right? Mm. And so that to me was like, it was a commission moment. Mm. It was a calling. It was a time when I felt so confident that I was here to serve. Like I was here to do something for other people. And I didn't know what that was. Mm. I was a worship leader at the time. I was working at a mega church in Reno at the time. It was an undeniable experience for me, right? Like we can talk about what that was and mentally what that was for me and what might have been going on with my trauma and all of that, but it was still an undeniable, irrevocable experience that I had. Mm. And you know, at the time I took that to mean, yeah, like continue down this path of being a worship leader and serving people that way. And it fueled me. It really fueled me for a long time. You know, it's just one of those moments in my life. That's kind of, it's the mystical experience, it's the mystical encounter with what I call the divine. And it's something that I don't feel a need to defend or describe any more than that, other than to say what happened and how it impacted me. And
what a beautiful story. Yeah. I think lots of people, would love to have a story like that, but that's a story that happened to you. Yeah. And it's love that it wasn't just a voice. It's a voice that invited you to do something and you did it. I mean, I could think of myself on the side of a road in Northern California, a snowstorm. I'd be like, I'm not getting up. But you followed the voice. And even though you were 24 at the time, is that what you said?
I think 23 or 24. Yeah.
Now, you're a little older now, Flamie. Not that much. I know, honey.
We don't need to talk about that.
But here you are, and you were, you said today in your set, like, the pipe, you talked about all of life is ministry. And the sense of you've been commissioned, and so you were a mega church worship leader now, and now you're leading worship at Greenbelt up from the stage as a drag
queen.
Which
is a mega church of its own.
That's right, baby. We need more mega churches like Greenbelt. Amen. But and you were like, you said it like, oh, the pipeline from worship leader to drag queen is not that niche, honey.
It's not. No. there's yeah. I would say actually probably I meet more drag artists who have some history of that kind of singing in church or coming up in church or serving as clergy or ministers of some sort. Yeah, it's a lot of them.
How does drag feel different from being a worship leader? I mean, how does it feel different?
It's more uncomfortable.
Oh.
It takes more time. a robe and a stole is way easier to put on than all this nonsense. The point I'm trying to make is I don't see it as all that different. The difference for me comes in the intention and the, here's the thing about being a worship leader. You become really good at knowing your craft and knowing how to manipulate a moment, right? Like when I was a worship leader, when I was at the peak of my worship leading, I could just create a moment out of thin air with chords and turns of phrase and song choice, and I could get people to feel a thing that I wanted them to feel, right? And I became really good at that. Music is a powerful thing that we have at our disposal, and and like any tool, it can be used for a variety of purposes, right? It can be used to, I think, build up and edify and encourage, and it can also be used to manipulate and control and put people in the frame of mind that you want them in, to make them maybe more vulnerable or more receptive or more susceptible to suggestion. I think of times in my life when I was a worship leader and the goal was to make people feel like we weren't worthy, right? Like we should be very, very grateful that this great God has deigned to encounter us, right? Because otherwise we're just worthless flesh bags, trotting around here on this planet. And I regret that. I regret those moments, when I would be a part of a service that would ultimately move people to feel that way about themselves. And now it's hard for me. It's hard for me to sit through a modern worship service and not be really just highly tuned in to what's happening and what are they trying to get us to do and what are they trying to make us feel. And it can just be hard for me to enjoy church, enjoy worship services anymore because that was such a deep part of my own experience. So now, as a drag artist who is still doing a lot, like I'm still using a lot of the same tricks. music is still a thing that I know how to wield, and I still like to create moments out of thin air with my own words and my own But I think the point is, like, I want to be upfront about that. Like, I want y'all to know that I know that I have that power. And if anything, I don't want to direct people to feel any kind of disconnect from the divine. I want them to feel as close as they possibly can. And for me, that means I hope that we are, I hope that those moments, rather than maybe pointing us, you know, vertically, are maybe just pointing us inward. Mm-hmm. And that may all just be semantics, because maybe, maybe that's the same thing. Maybe God is within, right? And us looking internally is just, it's just a different way of saying that I'm trying to connect you to the divine experience. But through your own experience and through your own intuition and through your own, like your gut, you know, those are things that I wasn't allowed to use or trust coming up. My intuition, girl, the heart is deceitful above all things. Like, who can trust it? Lean not on your own understanding. Like, those were the teachings that I received, and they were interpreted in a way as to make me feel as though my own experience could not be trusted. My own heart can't be trusted. If you want something, you better be very suspicious of that desire, because it's probably an immoral desire, you know? So for me, it's about reconnecting us to our intuition, reconnecting us to what our bodies already know. I think it's a divine installation. I think intuition is a divine thing, and I think it's very good to be connected to your own intuition. So that's
beautiful.
I would say that's beautiful. The difference between the two.
Amen. Amen.
Sorry, gorgeous. I told you I like to talk, girl.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's why you're here. That's why you're here. We're gonna play a game. You said you felt like you were on a game show. We have this little game show trick, which is basically the Hope and Anchor version of improv. It's called the Circle of Trust. Now, you may know it, Flamey, as the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, my gosh!
So we have here the Circle of Trust, and this is basically just like it's a chance of getting into some conversations. So we value, as we said here at the Hope and Anchor, having deep conversations about life and looking for the spirituality in the midst of those things, running through those things, acknowledging we all think about that in different ways. So what we're going to do is invite you to spin the Wheel of Circle of Trust, the Wheel of Fortune, Circle of Trust. And if it lands on a prompt that you'd like to tell a story about or ask a question about or whatever, great. If it lands on a prompt that you don't like, you can spin one more time. But the second spin is your prompt. Now, there's all kinds of creativity, but we're hoping to go into the depths here. So not just like, you know, British weather talk, which is great.
So not the conversation we've been having so far.
No, none of this. Just all this surface level stuff. Let's go deeper, ain't flaming. No, seriously. Give it a good whirl.
Okay.
Give it a good whirl.
All right. I'm going to do this like they do on Price is Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a full body experience.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Spin that wheel. Spin that wheel.
You got to go up first.
Yes. oh, here it goes. Let's see. Rituals. Ooh. Oh. How does that sound to you?
Oh, my gosh. I love that, actually.
Practical spirituality.
Because it's practice. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wherever you want
to
go.
The first thing that comes to mind for me when we say the word ritual is I used to work for a theater. I've only been doing this job for a year, full time. I've been doing drag for about 4 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You're a baby drag queen.
I'm a little baby.
Okay.
I used to work in nonprofit in communications and fundraising. And for about 7 years, I worked for a theater. It's actually in San Diego. We have the Old Globe Theater. So, which is, it's built and designed, fashioned after Shakespeare's Globe in London, which my husband and I got to go see last week. And I don't know why ours is called the Old Globe, though, because it's definitely newer than y'all's.
Yes. Americans think that theirs came first, you know? It's like...
Americans think they're first in everything.
I know. I'm always like, people are like, have you been to Plymouth? I was like, yeah, it's named for a place in from America, you know? Birmingham, named after the... Anyway, go ahead. Karen, it's your story.
Isn't it funny how, like, you know, we have New York and you guys have York? Like, what? Where was I? Oh,
theater.
So, theater. I worked at this theater, and this was, so I was really, this is when I was first like exploring and experimenting with the practice of meditation and mindfulness. And I had heard about it, you know, not heard about it, obviously, from a lot of sources. But the thing that pulled me into it was this guy, Dan... his last name, but he was a news anchor on ABC in the States.
Rather.
Nope.
Carry
Maybe
on.
It wasn't Dan. Maybe it was a different
Tom
name.
Brokaw.
Wasn't that one either. it wasn't Walter Cronkite. Anyway, I can't.
We'll edit it in later. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Yeah, yeah.
Well. anyway, so this guy, he was a news anchor in the States, and he had an on-screen panic attack. And do you remember
yes,
this
I know
story?
What you're talking about. Yeah.
Carry on. And so that experience led him into this like journey and search into mindfulness and meditation. And he like did, you know, like retreats with like Tibetan monks and things like that. And then he like took what he learned and put it in a book, and now it's an app actually. There's an app called 10% Happier. His whole concept is like, what if I told you there was a practice that could make you, it wouldn't solve every problem in your life. Because that's too tall of an order, and too often that gets marketed to us, right? Like, this will solve everything for you, but maybe you could be 10% happier. And I just liked that, so that was my entry point.
Okay.
And I was working for the Old Globe Theater at the time, and it was a day job, you know, a desk job, 9 to 5. So the theater itself is dark all day until the actors get in, you know, in the afternoon and start rehearsals. So I would get in super early, and I would just go into our theater, big theater. I don't know how else to describe it. It's a theater. and it's dark. There's just a ghost light on stage, 600 seats, but you know, soundproof, obviously designed to protect you from, sound during performances. So it's just like this quiet, dark, wonderful space. Mm. And I got into the practice of getting to work like earlier and earlier and earlier. I was like arriving an hour early for like before I was supposed to even be there, because I just was enjoying this experience of going into the theater and sitting there and like practicing, like literally, like it was practice, because I was not very good at it and still am not sometimes. But the practice of like acknowledging thoughts, letting them go, trying to clear your mind, all of that. And that was really for me kind of the start of a journey that it's kind of how I landed at this idea of like, no, you know what works for me is spiritual practice. It's things that I can actually do with my body that make my day go better.
Yeah.
Make me less likely to respond with flashes of anger. Make me less likely to or just, you know, give me more self-control. Like, the fruits of the spirit, you know, like things that actually make me better at that stuff. Like those are the things that the rituals that I wanted to incorporate into my life. And it kind of started.
Love it.
Started in a theater.
Thanks for spinning that wheel.
That was fun.
I am also a meditator.
Yes.
And I learned about it in seminary back in the day and then did a little bit. But when I got into recovery, it became addiction recovery. It became sort of my daily practice, is sort of having that silence. And I'm an extrovert. As you might be able to tell. And my spiritual director was like, maybe you should think about some silence. And I was like, oh, that's not the way that extroverts do spirituality. We, you know, we need to find a chatty spirituality. And she's like, that's really bullshit, actually. You need, and I'm not trying to project this on anybody else, she's like, you need to learn how to shut up. Now, we all have different takes. Some of us need to learn how to speak, right? And like, I just want to name that. But for me, learning how to be quiet. And I think when I first started meditating, I had this great sense of deep, deep, deep peace, a sense of being held in the arms of God, in the sort of still small voice that's kind of, but then as I stayed with the silence, particularly as I kept doing my work, I had all this stuff start to surge up. So you're in the quiet and like deep stuff started coming up out of the caverns. And my spiritual director was like, this is how it's supposed to work. And I think I'd always thought of spiritual practice as like going to a spa to get sort of recentered, you know, like, and it can be that, praise God, that you get that comfort. But for me, at least, to have a practice where I am disturbed, I don't think that like that stuff is what God intended to be, but God, I believe, is like bringing that stuff up so God can deal with it and help, I can see it. And so I just think sometimes about that spiritual practice, you know, it's both comfort and you absolutely. Know? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be, well, especially when you're, you know, as you are gay, I wouldn't know. but you have some of that, you know, I was listening to the conversation that happened in this room right before and trying not to cry over there in the corner because thinking about the journeys of both our ancestors and, you know, our generation. I'm going to put us in the same generation.
I'm a little younger than you. A little older than you, rather. Sorry, a little older than you.
You don't know what this makeup's concealing, babe. But yeah, like when you have kind of the trauma that we do, like and we become very practiced at avoiding, bearing,
shaming,
dealing, hiding. Girl, I did conversion therapy for 5 years, and that was a masterclass in corking and bottling and hiding and running from and ignoring and trying to like kill a part of yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And I keep hitting this microphone. I'm sorry, podcast listeners, if you're getting jolts.
John will edit that all out.
Oh,
don't
thanks,
worry,
John. Yeah. that whole period of time for me was a time when I was so numb. So I didn't have high highs or low lows. I just kind of was in this like flat. Yeah, and I didn't know that was called depression at the time.
Yeah.
5 years I was in that program, very committed to the idea that I could change my sexual orientation. And when I finally started to come out of it, crawl my way out, it was such a painful experience because I had forgotten what it was like to feel things. And it's like when you sleep on your arm and your arm falls asleep, and then when the blood starts flowing again, it's that pins and needles, except it's in your soul and it's like 10 times more painful.
Yes.
And that's it. So it's hard. It's scary and hard to confront those things, but it is such a necessary, worthwhile practice to go through to because the other side of it is. You know, it's sequins and wigs.
all the time. Laurel in the hair, good-looking face. I mean, and what's the alternative, really? And this is this thing, like, what's the alternative to letting it come up and being transformed in real life to whether it's sequins all the times or just real or reality? The alternative is, like, living your life locked down until you
I mean, the alternate for me, the alternative was, not feeling anything in life.
Yeah.
Going through life just
flat.
Unimpressed, no high highs, no low lows, just not feeling. And that was, you know, ultimately, finally, I decided that's not how I wanted to live.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do live that way. And, you know, that was just my experience. For a lot of people, the experience is not living, right?
Yeah, that's right. Literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
That's why we have the higher rates of self-harm and suicide among LGBTQ youth and homelessness and things like this. Like those still are those stats are still higher for LGBTQ youth today. Even though, as we heard in that discussion, things are getting better. They really, really are. And I'm so thrilled to hear some of the experiences that the young folks here at Greenbelt are having, young queer folks are having. But
we're going to take a couple questions here in a second. But let me ask you a follow-up on that. Like, you're starting a tour this coming up called the No Trauma.
No More Trauma.
No More Trauma Tour.
Yes. Thank you, Mary J. Blige.
You talked about Exodus. And that kind of reparative therapy, which is not really therapy, is it? It's reparative terror, really. When I was a church planter in Chicago, we started a church that was tried to be kind of evangelical and inclusive in both of those things. And it was a great place, lots and lots of queer folk. And we were really open and inclusive and did weddings for everybody. It was that kind of place. It was awesome. But I remember one time very early in when we launched worship and we were playing a song. I don't remember what the song was, but it was a song about transformation and being healed. And I saw this young man leave the room. And so I just sort of found him later in the service or whatever and said, "Are you okay?" He's like, "I'm not okay because that song," which was a song that was straight out of the Bible, really, was the song that they played at my Exodus group as about trying to sort of be transformed, you know, and it was traumatizing. It was traumatic to hear, and that wasn't our fault, but it was what he experienced. And so, just thinking about you singing contemporary Christian music, acknowledging that the words that you sing, even the ones that come straight from your embodied heart, are words that can give life, but also can trigger. And I think that's not just for drag queens or evangelists or for musicians. That's for all of us who speak in the name of God or try to, that our words can be healing, but also can be triggering. How do you hold that as a minister of God's divine goodness? How do you hold the power of that?
Yeah, it feels weighty, right? It feels like a real... A true responsibility, because I know what it's like to feel triggered, and it's not fun. Mm. And you know, I play a lot of churches. I often will ask, you know, who here is a member of this church, or who comes from another church, and then I'll ask, and who's in a church for the first time in a very long time? And there's always quite a few usually, and I just try to take a moment to like connect with those people and be like, hey, I got you. And that whole trust your drag queen thing, that's a little bit of a funny, you know, through line in my set sometimes. I mean it, you know, like I hope that I can earn your trust as a performer. As I take you through my story the album that's coming out is called Church. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to hide anything. I want it to be right there in the title. I want you to know what you're getting into so that you can opt out. You don't have to go to the drag queen show if she's in a church and that's going to be hard for you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, we're also calling the tour No More Trauma.
Yeah.
Because that's what I want to be about. I just want to be about, I want to live a life that helps people get to where I feel I am. You know, I am 40 something, and and it's been a long, long journey. Like, my coming out process was all of my 20s. You know, folks ask, when did you come out? And I was like, oh, from about...
you know, a whole decade,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, 2012 to 2022, or whatever it was. I guess it was 2000. I don't know. I can't do math. But yeah, it's I want to... That's what I wanted my art to do, is create space where people can maybe feel those things coming up from the caverns, but also know that they're safe. They're in a space that's safe and designed to confront those things with gentleness and compassion, and really hold each other through it. So that's...
It strikes me that, you know, trust your drag queen is the through line for you. It strikes me that you are trustworthy because you are telling your story about what it has been like and is like to come through. And, you know, wise teachers have said you can only pass along that which you know, and you can only share that which you are actually experiencing spiritually. And you have walked through, you know, fire and walked through conflict. And so you have, I mean, that's where the trust comes from, right? The trust doesn't come only from your gorgeous voice and your amazing poetry. To my mind, the trust comes from not just from you, but for any of us who's trustworthy. It's like you are telling the truth about what's happened, you know? Yeah. I think that is the kind of trust we need in whether we're queer or straight, in church and religious community in general.
Yeah. Truth telling. I think you hit it on the head. It's truth telling, and it's and we can only be truthful about our own experience. So I can't I don't know what it's like for every other person, but I know what it was like for me. And obviously, you know, it's a principle in storytelling. There is the specific in the universal. There's universal in the specific. I got that backwards. But you know, when I tell the specific details of my story, we're all gonna find something in that, right? Not all of us, but many of us can. And that's the beauty of being authentic and telling our stories and sharing them with whatever our specific art form is, right? Mine happens to be songwriting and maybe a little bit of makeup. So
wonderful. Do I have a couple of questions from the congregation, from the gathered people of God? I see one there in the purple, I think. Just to... Yes. Yes. You want to shout it out? Could you repeat the question?
The question is she going to apply for Drag Race? but specifically in order to show representation for queer Christians. I have auditioned once before, and I'm thinking about doing it again. I think I'm kind of a Drag Race super fan for sure. And so there, like, there's a bit of me, especially that first time I auditioned, I was just like, oh, it'd be so cool, you know? And now that I've been doing this job for a year and I've figured out that, okay, there's a job, like there's a career in this for me and I don't have to be like, you know, at the Olympics of drag in order to make a living, it feels less urgent. However, I mean, it is kind of the platform for drag, and I'm still a fan, and I still love that show. So I'm not going to lie and say, oh, no, that Drag Race, who needs that? No, like, I would be ecstatic to be on that show, and I may still audition again one day. But right now, I'm honestly too busy. Like, I've just been touring nonstop for the past year, and I don't know if you've ever seen the Drag Race application, but it is a marathon. Like, they put you through the rigmarole to audition for that show. So,
like, what's one thing that's on it that you'd be surprised?
Oh my gosh, like, you have to film two different Snatch Game characters, two different lip syncs. You have to do like a whole shade. You have to do what? 16 outfits. Did we do 16?
Oh, who's this? Oh, is this your...
That's husband Chris over there.
Oh, hi, Chris. I thought it was just someone else who'd apply for Drag Race. Okay.
Chris is speaking up because Chris was the cameraman for my entire audition. So he's like, I'll tell you what we had to do. It was like my entire December 2 years ago. It just was the entire month. So
16. It's a lot. Another question from the audience. Maybe someone from the back. Anybody in the back who wants to ask a question? Over here.
And then we'll get these. Right here, we got someone on the couch.
Got someone here. Okay, great.
I heard about that. Oh. So the question is, why is there misogyny in drag? Wow.
That's a big one.
This is the can of worms, and it's worth talking about, absolutely. I mean, I had this conversation earlier today, actually. You know, there are people... What is going on? Y'all are just throwing things up at this table. It is cracking me up. I love it.
I'm not going to name any names because I do know these people and I don't want it to be in the podcast, but there's some typical problem people over and over again up here.
You know
who you are.
I love it. I do think that there is, like with anything, we have to be very mindful about what we're doing and how, not only what our intention is, but how it is received and how it is perceived and how it lands, right? Intention isn't the only thing that matters. What matters is how things impact folks, whether we intended to do harm or not. And so that is I think a very real concern within the world of drag because, people, there's this like argument that comes from folks in very bad faith. It's not a good faith argument at all, but like there's this term woman face.
Oh yeah.
Right. You're just doing woman face. You're appropriating female culture. And as stupid as that accusation is coming from someone who has no intention of having like that actual conversation with you, it is a conversation worth having because we have to really break it down to the bones and understand that for me and where I'm coming from in this world, like I'm not coming from a binary perspective of gender. I'm non-binary. I identify as non-binary. And so for me, this is like all an exploration of gender for me and where I land on that and fluidly land on that spectrum because I am it changes based on the day. You know, I might feel one way, one day, and then the next day I want to be, you know, in my full face or wear big hair or whatever. The misogyny is definitely there. It's a feature, a facet of the culture that we as drag performers need to uproot and get rid of. And we do that, I think, by just like we do with anything else, more intentional inclusivity. You know, we talk about drag and people kind of have generally have one idea in mind, and that is like a cis man who like performs with as a woman, like puts on a wig and what we consider socially traditionally to be a woman. And that's not at all what drag is. Can we cuss on this?
Yeah, sure. Talk how you talk.
Yeah. So for me, the feature of drag is gender fuckery, right? Like that is that's the through line in all of drag. But drag is theater beyond that. It can be absolutely anything. So it can be, you know, what we typically think of, like that you'll see at your local drag bar, which is a lip sync and comedy and that sort of thing. But it can be music too, as I do. It can be, it can be dramatic. It can be sad. It can be puppets. It can be dance. Like drag is theater. So it can be anything. And inclusive in that should be like every kind of drag performer. It's not just drag queens. We have drag kings. We have drag things. We have people who identify as drag clowns. That can be any gender whatsoever. You don't have to be a cis man to do drag. And hopefully we all, you know this at this point in 2024. But still what gets kind of the biggest spotlight is that kind of, yeah, it's a cis man doing wearing, you know, fake tits and hip pads, and I think we just have to be more intentional about showing that really what this art form is about gender fuckery and pushing those boundaries and remind, like, being in your face about the fact that gender is not a binary. Just because right now in 2024 we associate like a high heel with a vagina, weirdly. Why do we do that? It didn't start that way. High heels were not invented for women. They were invented for men, actually. So it's just...
What?
Yeah.
They were for horse riding. Is that right? Wow. Did y'all know that they were invited? And everyone else is nodding. Okay, well, here we go. Smart crowd.
Yeah, so it's really just about telling the whole story of gender exploration and not just this one narrow bit of like, isn't it funny that this man has put on a wig kind of thing, which I think culturally has been that's what we've spotlighted.
Yeah. Was there a question over here?
Oh, yes. We had some hands raised on the couch.
Okay.
Fight it out.
I'm from Brazil, so sorry about my English. And
no apologies.
Maybe
Oh,
that's a lot. Could you repeat that question?
Yeah, this question is great. Folks. So the question is like, what was it like to come out? As first for me, it was coming out as gay, and then it was, well, now I'm a drag queen. Oh, and by the way, also I have a gender identity component to this. And I'm non-binary. So that was a journey. And then what was that like for my family? How do they respond? And then how do I respond to them if they are not accepting? Right?
Maybe that for last me, part of the
question. Yeah, for me, it really depends on my proximity to the family member. So my parents are on their own journey with all of this, with my parents, for instance, I have the kind of relationship with them where I would not cut them out no matter what, really, and we have kind of ongoing communication around this thing that gets adjusted every few years. You know, my mom actually ended up walking me down the aisle at my wedding, which was not expected at all. That was a big surprise coming from her. So for me, that's like a real testament of what, like, if you have the capacity to commit to the relationship, you can see like some good growth and some good change. Not just on one side, not just on my mom's side, but on my side, you know, too. Mm-hmm. Like making me more aware of her situation and how hard it is for her to excavate some of this stuff too, because she was indoctrinated in the same way that she indoctrinated me. Right. However, I have some family members, so I don't have a particularly close, you know, connection with, never did. And, 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 And they've said some really terrible things to me. They've been very vocal online. And so I don't have a problem drawing a hard boundary when I need to. And that's a big theme, actually, I think, in a lot of my music. Actually, the new record that's coming out talks about this in a couple different songs. But I think it can be really healthy and helpful to evacuate, to leave relationships that are doing you harm, especially if there's not like a deep connection to that person. So mm-hmm. yeah, I have family members that I've essentially cut off. Mm-hmm. I've essentially said, hey, mm-hmm. like I'll have a relationship with you if you can stop doing this specific harm mm-hmm. to me and my community. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, no, I'm not here to educate every single person. That mm-hmm. I don't have the time. mm-hmm. So it's a matter of like how much of my own energy and my own personal investment do I want to put into that relationship. Mm. So, yeah.
We have time maybe for one more question. I'm going to do just a quick little thing for the podcast because it's unusual. Usually we're taping this podcast in a studio and it's unusual to be looking at the Hope and Anchor audience in the whites of their eyes. And we've been hearing these wonderful questions and wonderful responses tonight, which is the benefit of recording here at Greenbelt, some instant reaction. But if you are listening on your phone right now or your smart speaker as usual, you're just as welcome to make a contribution. Just slide into our DMs on Instagram and TikTok. We're Hope and Anchor Crew. Thanks, everybody. There's one more question over here.
It's a great question. Thank you. First of all, the question was, Flamey, you were amazing. You did such a good job. That's the part I remember from what you said. No. You talked about the vulnerability on stage, which thank you very much. I appreciate that. I feel honored by that question. And how do I kind of protect myself after, you know, kind of doing that regularly? And that is my show. What y'all saw is what I do. And so, yeah, it does get, you know, there's a part to performing anything, I think, that can become a little rote, and you do it enough times, it's muscle memory, and so you're not necessarily having to fully delve into the emotions every single time. However, like, it happened today, like, there are just moments sometimes mm-hmm. when you realize what you're saying, and you realize, like, the part of yourself that you have just, like, put on display for the room or for the field, as it were, and mm-hmm. it can, like, that those moments can be kind of jarring, and that happens pretty regularly. I didn't really, until doing this job, I didn't know what Brené Brown was talking about with this whole vulnerability hangover thing. Mm. I was like, what is she talking about? Vulnerability hangover. Like, that's not, like, I'm an open book. I'll talk about whatever. And I think it's the more I do this work, the more I realize, just how my own, like, rawness around some of these things it's the key. For better or worse, it's the key to, like, having those really lovely moments with an audience. And at the same time, it can, like, I can go back to the hotel room afterwards and just feel like a little raw myself. And so for me, it's I'm actually a huge introvert. I know I'm deceiving you all with this conversation. Flamey somehow brings it out of me, like, somehow, like, this being able to don all of this and do drag, like it helps me in these conversations. It helps me just be more of an open person and have it brings out the extroverted side of me. But when I'm done, girl, I am back in the hotel room. I am like, I do not want to, like, talk to anybody. I don't want to see anybody. So I do a lot of just like self-care in that way after shows. Touring is actually, like, super ideal for me because, you know, I'll go do the show and then the next day I've got to go drive 5 hours or whatever. And I will, like, just being in the car alone is probably my favorite thing in the whole world right now. I don't even play music half the time. I don't turn on an audiobook. I just sit there and drive in silence like a complete weirdo. And I love it. Yeah, it Sometimes my feet get wet. Sometimes I get out of the car and yeah.
And scene. You know, someone said before the show started tonight, like someone said, "Oh, Flamie's here. She's over in the corner." And I had seen you on stage and your marvelous magnified persona, you know. And so I was looking for you, and I expected to see someone like, "Ha ha 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 ha, darling!" But you were sort of lying down behind the banner in this really like chill zone. It was like drag queen in meditation, you know. It was wonderful. So it's that kind of part of that care.
It is. It is that. It's nice to. I think drag just lets me be all the things that I am, you know, as opposed to how I lived before, where I just felt like I couldn't. You know, it actually, if I can't take just another super quick second to talk about.
Oh, come on.
I talked about earlier about how you're being raised as a boy, being raised a male in the church that I came up in, I was expected to be a leader. The way our church worked was if you had a penis, you got to talk on Sunday morning. And not just got to, but you were expected to. Like the men just took turns. We didn't have a pastor. We didn't have, leadership in that way. We just had men. And so men took turns like praying or like giving a short little homily or just reading a Bible verse or whatever. And I like that's what I was expected to do. And my papa was kind of the pillar of our church and our community. And he just from the earliest of ages, he was training me for this job, for this role, right? To like speak up in church. And I never did, not once, from the time I was born until the time I was 18 and I left for college and didn't ever go back to that church. I never once stood up on Sunday morning and did what I was expected to do. And I've thought about that a lot over the years because obviously like I have the capacity to do that. It's in me. But I think it came down to the fact that I, even back then, like my body knew something was up, right? Like my body knew like the only reason that they want me to do this is because of what's going on with my organs. And that's not, that doesn't define me in this space, right? Like what's going on with my physical body is not actually what is defining who I am and how I should operate in a space like this. And I don't know, I think about how now this is my job, you know, and I get up and I talk to people and I sing songs and I tell stories, all of the stuff that I was expected to do in my church growing up and never once did. And it's just an interesting little journey.
Little did
Papaw know. May, you know, God rest his soul.
God rest his soul in the communion of saints. We are out of time. We want to honor Flamie's time and honor your time to get on the things. But I wonder if you, would you be willing to sort of sing us out?
Oh, sure.
That's all right. Give you a second to set up and I can let you have my microphone if you want to do that with your guitar.
Oh, okay.
For those of you here tonight, we're going to be doing this kind of thing every night tomorrow at 6. Well, Holly will say more about that, but the next couple nights. But just want to know, if you would like to find out more about the podcast, you can listen to previous episodes and future episodes by finding Hope and Anchor Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We have previous episodes with Nadia Boltz-Weber, Kate Botley, William Hansen. Anyone know who William Hansen is? Okay, right. Just interesting to sort of know who people know. Help I Sexed My Boss podcast, if you haven't seen that. Upcoming podcast episodes with Helen Lederer of AbFab fame, Great British Bake Off winner, Peter Salkins. And we'd love to have your comments on the podcast too. So you can comment on social media or text us on our new burner phone. Beth, I got this off this podcast called Electoral Dysfunction. They have a burner phone, and I was like, I want a burner phone. So we have a burner phone, and the burner phone is 07387-041566. 07387-041566. You can text in, you can call in, and you might be on the podcast. All right. Can we give, even before she sings, because her value is not just in her performance or art, but in who she is in God's eyes and who she is in herself. So can we give a huge thanks to Flamie Grant?
Hi.
Fabulous. Okay, yeah, we'll do a little. Hopefully,
is that
we'll,
all right?
Hopefully we'll catch some guitar and catch some vocals here.
She did not know this was going to happen, so thank you for
I suspected it might, but wow, cool. Thank y'all so much. What a treat to get to spend this. It was supposed to probably be an hour, and it was probably way longer, but this time with you. So thank you for hanging out here in the Hope and Anchor tent. Thanks to our hosts and our staff taking good care of y'all. We've talked a lot about, give it up. We talked a lot about meditation, so I think I'll just do a song that is a song that is very much about that spiritual practice for me. This is called Holy Ground. How's the sound? Fire has gone wholly dark. It has burned its final spark. I love the music of the wood, and I would live here if I could. The earth would be my bed, the moss beneath my head. Spend my days on holy ground. If I were not so holy bound. Ooh. 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 Water has gone fully still. I walk its edge along a hill. The wind has blown its final breeze. The water rests in night's reprieve. What silence must it take to soothe so deep an ache? Let the water take me down. If I were not afraid to drown. When I wake up, will you be gone? Which side of the mountain will I find you on? If I promise not to make a sound, might I feel the resonance from holy ground? Sky is wholly opened wide. The last lonely cloud has moved aside. Immense and fully filled with stars, Venus, Mercury, and Mars. The miles from there to here, what soul could pioneer? I would fly to worlds unknown if I believed they held my home. When I wake up, will you be gone? Which side of the mountain will I find you on? If I promise not to make a sound, might I feel the resonance from holy ground? Ooh. Thank you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.